Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, along with Brother Satawi Jaheed. We welcome to our Monday night podcast. And we also want to welcome those I consider the panel, Brother Rico Crowley, Ms. Kathleen Murphy, Brother Haki, and yours truly, David Murphy, as well as Brother Satawi Jaheed. So we're going to get started tonight. We're going to talk about our story. I know this is Black History Month, but we are history makers. Each one of our lives is etched in history, whether you want to believe that or not. But you have made history one way or the other. But before we get started, you know, we always like to start off on the good foot, as I like to say, with some good information. And Brother Satawi always brings it home with some positive, influential information. So Brother Satawi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. Yes. The reading from tonight, we do a reading every week on here from Daily Motivations for African-American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who also wrote Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, which is a blueprint for eliminating poverty in our families. In the reading for tonight, February the 20th, when will it ever end? The secret to the fountain of youth is to think youthful thoughts. Josephine Baker, actress, dancer, and entertainer. Creativity is one of the characteristics of infinite intelligence. Actual tables seem to confirm that high achievers have an innate need to be more creative. As a group, creative men and women, research scientists, innovators, painters, writers, philosophers, not only live longer, but also remain productive longer than their non-creative counterparts. For example, at the time of writing of this book, A.J. Gaskins was still negotiating business deals when he was 100 years old. At 88, T.M. Alexander is still selling life insurance. At 75, Dr. Selma Burke completed the requirements for her Ph.D. and a teaching career that spans more than 80 years. John Morton Finney earned his fourth bachelor's degree at 75. At 82, Dorothy Height still voices the causes of Black women's rights. Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington, one of the most respected figures in the history of jazz, gave one of his finest recitals at New York's Carnegie Hall at the age of 75. Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, Chairman Emeritus at Morehouse College, received 51 honorary degrees in his lifetime and gave his most meaningful lectures while in his 80s. We're not by years, but by events and our emotional reactions to them. Faith, courage, interest, optimism bring us new life and more life. Fertility, pessimism, frustration, living the past are not only characteristics of old age, they're contributed to it. Time is always on the side of the achiever. Age is only a number, not my outlook, but my life. I will live today by my inner clock and worry less about my age. And that's what got a lot of us, you know, up in years, is just keep ticking. You know, we move by our inner clocks. And and so you're a good example of that, David. You know, you move by your inner clock.
I kind of figured I was being targeted when you were talking about that age. But in any case, you know, it's an honor and a privilege, you know, to reach my objective. But I tell you one thing, there's a lot of folks, man, who's out there on the front lines. Like you say, age is nothing but a number. I remember someone told me, he said, humans are the only people talking about sitting back, talking about retiring. We're going to stop doing this, stop doing that. But they also said this. They say a lion will always be a lion. An eagle will always be an eagle until the day they die. They're going to roar and they're going to soar until the day they die. So if you are who you are, what God has blessed you with, those gifts and talents, it's not for a day, not for a season, but for a lifetime. And so roar and soar until the day you die. And that's what I plan to do. because if you have a mission in life, which we all do, if you find your mission, your purpose, then pretty much it will not let you go. You can't let it go. So you might as well go ahead and proceed and do what is expected of you. And because this is Black History Month, you know, I don't take this lightly because our history, I don't know too much about, you know, only thing about what I've read. I know my history. But I do recall a time when I was going through a difficult time. And I was at this company where I was the only Black printer there. And I wasn't treated too fairly, put it that way. But because of those, my ancestors, I used to carry books, autobiographies about our people to their jobs. And when I read their stories, it made my kind of pale. You know, I mean, I mean, it seemed like I had nothing to complain about compared to what they had to go through. And so I am truly grateful because they did help me. Just reading this, they'll help me get through some of them trying times. And at the same time, it gave me strength and power and just to know that we again stand on such great shoulders, people who stood up against all types of atrocities. And thank God for them yesterday. But you know, I understand that we have to know where we've been to know where we're going. But yesterday is gone. And today is all we really have in hope for a better tomorrow. We have several people on here tonight. You know, the way I like to do these podcasts is not just giving out information. I like people to share. This is a very interactive podcast. But before we get into our history, I just want to share something with you about the National Black Unity News, which is the host of this podcast. You see, the National Black Unity News also stands on great shoulders of great publishers from the past. Because that's what it also inspired me to get into people like John Johnson and Black Enterprise Magazine, Essence Magazine, Jet, Ebony. And like I say, during the time that they got started, they had to go through so much. And then even further back than that, Marcus Garvey. And so here we are today. And we still facing some of the same atrocities that they are facing. And but we have made many strides, you know, toward what some may call justice or freedom or equality. But personally, that's a state of mind that each individual is in, because nobody can keep you unless you allow them to. Now, they can put you in a cell. They can do this and do that. But they cannot lock your mind, your heart, and your spirit up. They can't enslave that unless you allow that to happen to you. But recently, getting back to this National Black Unity News, it's made up of a host of individuals who really care about us, Black melanated people. I mean, they really care. And not only do they put up their experience, their expertise in their chosen fields, but they also put up their finances as well. How dedicated can one be, not only, you know, to share information with you, help finance the information for you, and collectively, we are a powerful force. Even though we are a small voice, but we are being heard here in the United States and beyond. We have changed a lot of people's lives. We have inspired quite a few people. And I take pleasure in the fact to know that I'm amongst these great people. History makers, because we are making history today with the National Black Unity News. And we have so many, I can say, it's so many people that has came and some still here, and we bringing some new ones on to keep this, you know, this march going, because like I say, we're not going to stop until the victory is won. And this publication is not designed just for today, but it's designed for tomorrow. So my children and my children's children will have this publication with them. You know, I believe that's going to happen. And so it's so many people on here now that, you know, I want to get to, so I'm going to pretty much shut up. But there's a thing I want to talk about tonight is our history. Because as I said before, everybody on here have a history. They have, each one of us have our own stories, our own battles that we've been through. Some of y'all have shared some of the things with me, and I'm going to bring some of that out because, see, a lot of us, quite a few of us, are still going through this battle of discrimination, racism, and all that combined. And some people don't know how to get out of it, you know, because, like I say, it's a state of mind as far as I'm concerned. But a lot of people physically had to go through something. And since they had to go through something, just maybe your story, your history can help somebody else. Because as I said before, it had not been for my ancestors reading their story, it inspired me so greatly to endure what I had to go through. Not only endure, but it inspired me to go on to be what I'm doing today. And so, again, that's how important your story. Don't never think, because nobody's life, nobody's, is a waste. We don't bring it to full potential, but it's not a waste. God don't make no mistakes, and you're here for a reason and a purpose. It's your job to find what that purpose is and to cultivate it, expand it, and then share it. And so, without being said, there's a gentleman on here. I want to start this conversation with, because this brother have a long history. And he's been there and done that. He was in the civil rights movement. He still is. He does so much. Dr. Charles Pender, can you unmute yourself, sir?
I'm here.
Yes, sir. Look, I want to start, you know, just very brief, because we got quite a few folks we want to get to today. But can you briefly share a little bit about your story, how you got started and where you are today?
Well, years ago, back in the 1980s and 90s, I got involved in the civil rights movement with very astute people at that time. Anybody heard of Wyatt T. Walker? He was the brain behind Martin Luther King, and he was in Petersburg. And Curtis Harris was his associate. Curtis Harris was the state president, and I was a chapter president in the SCLC, and we did some outstanding things, along with also Herbert Colton, which was a vice president for Martin Luther King, and we did some things. In fact, what comes to mind as we're sitting here, and I don't want to be long, we went up to I think it was 19. In fact, I got it right here. If you can see me, I got it right here. It says, from the Concerned Citizens of Justice, in 1995, January the 15th, went up to Roanoke, Virginia, to establish the largest Black SCLC chapter in the state. And Pernella C. Wilson gave me a plaque for doing outstanding work. But what happened in that particular car was some legends. We had Raymond Tucker, Herbert Colton, and Curtis Harris, myself, and one other person I can't remember. We drove up in his brand new Cadillac to Roanoke to establish the largest Black chapter in the state of Virginia. Soon after that, I got involved with Governor Wilder. I'm in that film with Governor Wilder. See, Wilder said, Wilder and Americans First. I'm in that film right behind Philpott. But what happened during that particular time, he was lieutenant governor. And then he ran for governor, and he came into Petersburg, and I believe it was on Cradle Road that this film was taken. But from that, it's so much history that it would take hours and hours and hours. I mean, just the Lord has blessed me to be involved with people who are movers and shakers. And what happened from that, that's what I'm doing now. All of my writings now is dealing with people being free from the mundane. In other words, the system itself is not your friend. It will never be your friend. So that's what I'm writing now, is how to be equivalently, suggestively, at peace with your maker. Your money, your status, it doesn't mean a thing unless I treat you like
you are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star 6.
If they really knew who these bleached out Negroes were, that they call themselves white folks, and I'm not being derogatory, because they have African DNA. We just don't read enough to understand what we're dealing with when that penal dam was calcified. We got to understand this. But our main focus is also get back into, I'm not saying go to any church. You are the church, but you got to read more. We got to read more about who we are as a people. And I think I can just give you that much because it's so much more. It's, wow, it's phenomenal.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it. And Dr. Pender is also an editor in the National Black Unity News. He's an author. He's many things. So we appreciate you, sir. And Brother Ross Bukie, can you unmute yourself?
Yes, I can do so. Good evening. Blessed night, each and everyone right here tonight. What
yes,
a pleasure
sir.
To be amongst the greats of the greatest.
Yes, sir. And Ross Bukie is an editor from Panama. And I just want to ask you, you know, just, you know, let us know, because you deal with throughout the diaspora about so many issues that dealing with us from African descent. And the same thing is happening here in the United States. It has happened all over the place. Can you share a little bit about our discrimination and racism from where you are and throughout your organizations and some of the subjects that y'all deal with?
Okay, well, right now, Panama, there is Carnival, and I was just glimpsing the news today, and I heard they say something that there was a time when black people wasn't able to be part of their carnival. Yeah, that was discrimination talk, and they're still saying it right now on the television, so that's really scary. And that doesn't make no sense when they're making census right now. And if you check, we're actually black, as more black here right now than all the others, other race of people around in Panama right now. So they're doing a census. They're doing census 2020, and it's happening right now because of the pandemic. They didn't able to do it. Now they're doing the census and. Percentage, the black is up right now. And so we are very, very important people down here as black people. And but they're still trying to manipulate with their news and their propaganda, and they're still acting racism out there. But I stay mostly in the black community with the black people and Rasta people, so I do not really go out there to face them and their racism. I stay with my people and build and keep building. But we need the black news there a lot to help push some of the news of our own to the world. And there is a lot of Honduras, Guatemala, yeah, Belize, all those countries going up there is black. There's patches of black there, and they really need their news to come out without any control of the white or the blankets. Movement, you know, the white or black, or white or blank. They call it blancos, you know. So, yeah, we have work to do, and I think the Black Unity News has that power, because when I received the newspaper first in my hand, I said, wow, this is a solution for what is happening here, and we could use this news to make it, you know, what it's supposed to be. And our affirmative is that with reparation and repatriation, and that's what we need to work with the Black Unity News powerfully, you know. So that's my you know, my thing. I stay away from facing people racist against me. I just try to stay away from it. So I don't have much thing to say, like I face racism daily. I just walk black, I just walk Rasta, and I just walk with love. So I don't really, you know, but I know it's true. For real.
Okay. You know, I appreciate that. And Brother Ross Bukie is opening up Panama for us and other areas as well. And so if you know people who's in all of those different places, you know, give him a call, because he can really, you know, assist you. And if you ever want to go to the country, give him a call. And Brother Ross Bukie, if you can you put your information in the chat as to how people can get in touch with you?
Yes, I do so because there's a statue of Marcus Garvey here that I would love some of my black brothers and sisters from the United States, when them come here, to able to come and find us at the Rastafari Alianza office we will have right here in La Santana, which is near the Casco Viejo, and we would love to attend our people, give them some of the culture, and take them to see Marcus Garvey's statue. So any day, any time, you send them, I'll be here to receive them and take them around with much love and respect.
That's what I'm talking about. I appreciate that, sir. Brother Haki, how are you, sir? Can you unmute yourself? Brother Haki. Hopefully, because Haki is what they may call, some called first responders. And he double task on it, so he might actually be working and just listening, can talk. But he's the one who actually introduced me to Brother Ross Buki while he was in Panama. Him and Brother Cliff were there for a convention. And see, Brother Haki and Sister Kim Poole, which will be our guest tomorrow night, will be on there. So I encourage everybody to be on tomorrow night to listen to, you know, their travels and some of the things they do. And but Brother Haki has, you know, traveled all over Africa, and they taken the National Black Unity News with them. So we here, there, and we everywhere. And so the paper is growing through leaps and bounds. So like I say, what's happening here is happening throughout the diaspora, happening to us all over the world. And speaking about all over the world right now, I see another one of our associates from out of England is with us. Brother Eunice Camera, how are you, sir? Brother Eunice, can you speak?
I'm trying to unmute.
Okay. Yeah, you already unmute.
Oh, I'm well. I'm well, Sir David. How are you? I just joined, so I basically don't know what is going on.
Well, we just talking about Black history, discrimination, racism, and I was just explaining to people what's happening here in the United States. You know, some of the things that we have been through, still going through. And just share, is there any type of racism or discrimination going on in England?
Sir David, racism is everywhere, to be quite honest with you. Let's just have a quick conversation. Do you believe that you're Black?
Well, by definition, you know, we've been called a lot of names, but you know, when it comes to labeling people and things like that, but you know, some people identify with Black, some in this country, some identify with African Americans, some people identify as none, and some people identify as this and this, that, but somehow, some way, you know, when we call the troops together, you know, I call it melanated Black African, that's why I say it that way. I'm a man. You know, but this is, you know, since this country, since time began, people label themselves. I'm an American, I'm a you this, and I'm a that, and I'm a this. So, you know, but I just want to know, you know, before we get into this conversation, I really, you know, because we got to get to a lot of people, I just want to know, basically, just to prove a point, is that what's happened to people of color out of African descent, do they have any problem like that in England?
Oh, we definitely do. But one thing that I tend to engage in, I tend to ask that question, because when I say, do you believe you are Black? And people say, well, I believe I'm Black. You know, when you say you believe, that's uncertainty. You understand? The color, it's of irrelevance. If I cut somebody right now, they'll bleed red. If somebody's family dies, if you're pain, we're all a spirit. And when you say, I think I am, you know, I believe I am, you're unsure. So that's a lot of ignorance going on all over the world with this racism thing. I believe that we're all spirits. I think that, you know, a lot of people are unsure, because when you say, I believe I am, if somebody asks me, well, are you Black? I am Black. Of color. Yes, the physical aspect of it. But yes, to answer your question, racism is something that we're all going to have to deal with, because if you think about it, the Portuguese are the ones that started labeling the Black people as Black, because they did not like the color Black. They did not associate us as human beings. So all this started with the Portuguese, and that is something, unfortunately, many of us are going to have to deal with, and our great-great-grandchildren. So here in the UK, It is undercover because the British are hypocrites. They will not call you a nigger in front of you, but when you turn your back, they will be more than happy to call you a monkey, go back to Africa. But the thing about Americans is that Americans are bold. They will call you a nigger in your face. They will call you a black or whatever in your face. But here in the UK, I think it is worse than it is in America. They just try to pretend as to say it don't exist, but it does exist. And black people do get killed in the UK as well, but they don't put it in the media.
Okay. Let me, I'm going to get, like I said, we have quite a few people I would like to get to. But I would just say this, personally, I say this all the time, is this, I believe there are three sets of laws, and one of them is God's laws. Then there's natural laws, and then there's man laws. And that's when it gets real shaky when it comes to man laws, because they make up things as they go, or to fit their needs or their purposes. And so, when it comes to separatism, this, that, but it's here, and I think in the natural laws, it don't make any difference. In God laws, it don't make any difference. But when it comes to man, we're on real shaky ground. But before I go any further, I see an old friend. I have to get you this brother because, matter of fact, Brother Ross Booker, I think this brother used to live very briefly in Panama. Hey, Zeke Stewart, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, David.
Yeah, it's been a while, sir.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, didn't you travel all over the place, but didn't you stay in Panama for a bit?
Yeah, I lived in Panama for about 3 years. Then I moved on to South America, Colombia, and probably still be there. The pandemic, drove me back here, so I've been back here over 2 years. But David, I've been meaning to connect with you because I'm on my way to Ghana. I'm moving to Ghana 2Q of this year. And I'm moving there. I'm not going for a visit.
Well, like I say, you're a man after my own heart, man. Like I say, you've been there, you've done that. You're a businessman. You cover so much ground. And people who, if you don't know, Zeke is one of them brothers, man. I don't know how old he is. I know he's older than I am, but this brother, man, he keeps himself extremely busy, and he does so much and helps so many people. Zeke, I always tell you, man, you like a big brother, man. I have so much respect for you, sir.
Well, David, I thank you for that, but I just want to just say another thing or two about the continent. There's been somewhat of a groundswell since 2019, the year of the return, and I've been doing a tremendous amount of research, and there's a lot of needs in Africa, but Africa is growing, but Ghana is growing very well in particular, and I'm going there to give back. I'm going to be doing affordable housing and things of that nature, and David, you'd know me from my finance base, and I'll probably gonna do some of that. But the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna start a wellness village, because there's a tremendous need for there, as it is here in the States. And I'll be contacting you because I just aligned myself with a sister out of North Carolina, and they've done a huge project in Africa in terms of affordable housing. It's called Africa Development Movement. There is a movement back, and we haven't felt it yet, but there is a movement back to the continent. The whole diaspora is moving in that direction.
Yes, sir. I belong to a group called the National Black Council of Elders, and quite a few of them had moved back to Africa and building villages such as what you are doing. So I'd like to talk to you about that a little later on, so that you may know some of them, or you might need to know some of them. So we'll talk about that. I appreciate you, sir.
Okay, thank you, David.
All right. And before I go any further, you know, we talk about a lot of problems all the time, but you know, this show is all about solutions. But of course, we have to bring up the problem to even bring up the solution. And I want to introduce you to most of the people on here are from the National Black Unity News. But Brother Reggie Taylor, can you unmute yourself, sir? You have to unmute yourself. There you
go. I did. Good evening, everyone. Hi, David.
Yes, sir. Now, Reggie is coming on board. You know, for those who may not know, you know, Reggie will be an assistant publisher with me in the National Black Unity News. This brother has a wealth of talent in publishing. He worked for those who were in Baltimore. He had also contributed to and worked with the Baltimore Times, the Afro, and right now he's working with five or six other newspapers around the country. He's a graphic artist. He's a writer. His brother, he's well-rounded. And he's getting ready to start a podcast. But can you give us a look very briefly, sir, about this podcast you're planning on doing in upcoming?
Absolutely. The podcast is called The Village Vibe. And we call it The Village Vibe because we are drawing on our African and ancestral roots to give honor to the elders, the wise men of the village, and people that come to. And I recognize the National Black Unity News and the person of David Murphy as the wisest of the wise elders as far as the publication is concerned. And there's a lot that we can share with the rest of the community, but it's a two-way street. We also want to hear from the community. And this is not a podcast like or a talk show that we've been seeing in recent years where people come on and pontificate and, you know, flex their intellectual muscle, and then at the end of the show, everybody goes home and nobody's really addressed our problems with any prospective solutions. This is going to be a solutions-oriented podcast where we're going to put it out about what can we do to make change and make change now. And then we're going to invite people in the community to come in, not to debate, not to discuss, not to pontificate, but actually try to come up with solutions, because we're facing a bunch of dire circumstances, not just in Baltimore, but nationally, that are not being addressed, and our situation is growing more dire. So that's what the Village Vibe is all about. I've worked for a city councilman. I've been a city councilman's aide. I've worked for a school superintendent. I've seen a lot of problems up close and personal. Grew up on the mean streets of Baltimore, West Baltimore, and lived a lot of what a lot of the most deprived people are experiencing right now, not just in Baltimore, but again around the country. And it's time for a podcast to be able to put out some solutions, put out something that's really legitimately an initiative, a program that can actually make a difference. So that's what we're going to do. And I've done a lot of research. As you mentioned, I've been an editorial opinion writer for the Afro, for the Baltimore Times, and right now writing for almost a half dozen newspapers in Minneapolis, Cincinnati, in South Carolina, in New York, Washington, D.C. And so I get to do a lot of research on the conditions in those places so I can write with authority on what's going on in those places, even though I don't live there. So I've got so much information that a lot of it needs to go back in the other direction and be shared with people who want to make a difference.
All right. I appreciate that, sir. And I'm looking forward to, you know, working with you. And speaking of that, Dr. Leroy McKinley, can you unmute yourself? Dr. McKenzie. Okay, hopefully.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm here. I'm trying to get this. My phone is moving around, so I wasn't able to adjust it. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Lee. He's also an author. He's a community activist. He's involved with so many organizations, do so many podcasts and networking events. And you got something coming up real soon. Can you share a little bit about what's taking place?
Yeah, sure. This coming Wednesday, there's an organization, the Reman Project Organization, which is a for-profit and non-profit, not-for-profit. I'm on the non-profit side of it. It's an organization, the Reman Project, that is coming here to Baltimore. We're having our signing day, as it's called, or launch day, to introduce to the city of Baltimore this organization that is on a mission to be able to impact the men's lives here, right here in Baltimore, in their life, in leadership, and their legacies, giving men, black men specifically here in the community, the tools that they need in order to be able to lead their life, also to lead their families, and then also to leave a legacy when it comes to them, making sure that they are able to be aptly equipped to just be who we are called to be as men, holding each other accountable as men, and then also being able to understand what it is, what manhood is. As we all know, the issues that are here in Baltimore, the issues that some serious issues that need to be unashamedly taken by the bullhorn, so to speak, and be able to say, hey, we as men have got to stand up. If our communities are going to be what it is that we want them to be, it starts with us. So the organization is about giving the men, and working with other organizations, working with the other government agencies that we have here in Baltimore, in order to be able to assist us to be able to do what it is that we are that we are commissioned and commissioned to be able to do. And that's, like I said, working if a gentleman needs help with their with reestablishing their relationship with their children, doing that, giving them the tools in order to be able to do that, connecting with them, gentlemen that may have some issues with their, with the court system, with their records, being able to assist them with being able to do that. Entrepreneurs, those entrepreneurs that are looking to be able to take their business and be able to network and build what Brother Cliff has, the what we also call the ecosystem, being able to build that so that we have a strong community all around. But it all begins with us. And one of the things that founder, Brother Dr. Donald Morton, what he talks about is two things. One, that we are not our brother's keeper. We are our brothers. So if one thing happens to us, it happens to all of us. But then two, it's about the mastery of manhood, who we are as men, and doing that that inner work, that core work that we need to do as men, so that we can be a band of brothers to be able to pull each other up, help each other, and be able to hold each other to a standard of manhood and who we are. So that's this Wednesday, I'm sorry, from 6 to 8 p.m. It's going to be over at the it's 3000 Chestnut Avenue. I can't think of the it's a big building. I forget the name of the building, but it's in Suite 100D.
Can you put that in the chat room for us, though, if you can? That way people can get it. But let me just say this. Dr. McKenzie, I appreciate, because like I said, you're involved with Black Professional Men and so many other organizations. And he's also an editor in the National Black Unity, and he's doing our book, programs. And so this brother does so much. And, we keep talking about my brother, Mr. Taylor, just mentioned about, a lot of people talk the talk, but they're not having, solutions to the conversations. And see, that would separate us from the crowd, so to speak. See, the National Black Unity News, we do a lot of talking. That's what public, we in media, but also we provide services. We have so many people, as you can see, just right on this call, who are actually doing, not talking, but they actually are doing something. And that's exactly what the National Black Unity News does. We bring information, we unite individuals. And by the way, Dr. McKenzie, I'll be there, God willing, because I'm willing. And so I'll see you Wednesday. And speaking of, solutions, Sister Joy Ford, can you unmute yourself?
How are you doing?
Look, we were talking about some of the issues, racism and things like that goes on. And then we also heard a few solutions that a lot of people are doing. And I always tell people, but, when I was coming up, and I started singing in this classroom. Teacher told me, shut up. And I became an introvert from that time on because I didn't have certain tools that combated that. You know, I didn't have little books, black books that I could read saying, yes, I can, and all this kind of stuff. You know, all we had was Dick and Jane, and that was it. And and so but here you come along in this day and time, we have so many authors with so many types of books. We got about 35, 40 books on here right with us right now, if you put them all together. And but you wrote several books for children, and that would have been so, man, if I had those type of books back in the day, then I would identify that who I am and what I am. I just perceived when they told me to shut up. That I couldn't sing, I couldn't do this, and that was it. Yeah. I had no reference guide. I had nothing else to go to. So, again, here you come along, and so many like you that write children's books, they inspire them. So tell me, as a solution, how your books can inspire and help our young people.
Well, one thing I do want to say is that even till this day, we have more children's books about animals and all other types of things than we do about black boys and girls. And so we definitely want to encourage people to write more stories, even their own stories. Everyone have their own story in which to share with others. And we need to teach our young people how to write stories about themselves and stories for other black children as well. My stories I write are to encourage and uplift our black girls and boys, because I see so much of that is needed in the school system, because we still have many children who have low self-esteem and don't see their value and their worth as much as they should. We're hoping to combat that with these type of books that I see many more people sharing and writing on the different networks across Facebook, and that I'm in several groups and I see more black children books being written, which is wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful. And this being Black History Month, people are saying, oh, you know, they don't want black history taught in schools. Well, you know what? You can go to any library and look up all the different types of black people who have done and contributed to society in great ways. We don't need people to feed it to us necessarily. We need to teach our children how to research and look for things that would help them to feel good about themselves. I know I went to a predominantly white school when I was in the fifth grade, and they weren't teaching about black history. So I decided to go to the library and do it for myself, because I needed to feel good about who Joy was. So it's important that we teach our kids to research, to look for good books about themselves, and our parents to buy the books for the children. And even at the Goodwill store, you can find amazing books. I went there the other day. Just so happened, there was a cart full of all these black children books. And I said, well, it was only God that led me to the back of the store where the books were that particular day. And there they were just waiting for me. So there's some amazing stories out there. And I'm just hoping that we get them into more stores that sell black products and things like that for black people, because they need to be there. And I'm working with a committee right now on trying to get that done. So hopefully that will help a lot of our children feel better about who they are and know more about who they are. And right. With that, I yield my mic.
Okay. Let me can you put your information in the chat room so if someone want to get in touch with you so they can do so? Okay, I appreciate that. Brother Cliff, can you unmute yourself, sir?
Yes, greetings, everyone.
Yes, sir. How you doing? Look, you heard about some of the issues that we have. You know, we all know the story about the racism and discrimination, the whole nine yards, us against them, we against they, and all that kind of stuff. But and you also heard some of the solutions that we have. Now, I believe you have a powerful solution. Can you share just a little, very briefly, about some of the things that you're doing?
Okay. Well, let's see. Maybe I'll start by explaining this little symbol here. This is basically the conceptual symbol that I have kind of embraced to symbolize what I call a Pan-African Cooperative Coalition. There are 12 spokes in this. I call it a lot of people call it a wheel because it looks like a spoke wheel if you look at it long enough. And I have 12 spokes there: artists, spiritual leaders, grassroots, educators, legal, media, political state builders, science and health, business, international activism, prison activism, and revolutionary Pan-Africans. And there's more than just those 12, but that's what I could think of at the time. And I was starting to run out of space in the graphic. So basically the idea of that is that those 12 different disciplines and more, while they each have their own particular emphasis, their own particular mission that they may be pursuing, they are all really tied together by the single overarching goal of building a free, self-determined, prosperous Pan-African world. So the idea there is to bring all those different organizations together in one place and first of all, give them an opportunity to spend some time with each other, to get used to looking at each other without arguing about everything, and then work out a way that the economic vision, the media vision, the legal vision, the education, the grassroots activists, the spiritual perspective, and the revolutionary, and all the others, can basically do what they normally do, but do it in such a way that their missions reinforce and strengthen each other instead of competing against each other. And it's in part based on the fact that we love to run around telling everyone, I have the answer, but no one has all of the answer. Everyone has a little piece of the answer, a little part of the answer, but everyone doesn't have all the answer. If that were true, Black Wall Street would still be here. Great economic program, but they couldn't defend themselves against the military-style assault. Wilmington, North Carolina, which became a progressive town in 1897, would have stayed that way in 1898, except that white terrorism destroyed it. The Panthers, even with their multi-faceted program, couldn't withstand the combination of media demonization, infiltration of their organization, military-style attacks by the FBI, local and state police, and the simultaneous prosecution of pretty much their entire leadership from coast to coast. So clearly, even those organizations among us that have a really comprehensive program, the fact of the matter is you can't do it all. So the idea there is to bring these different organizations together and gradually formulate a comprehensive Pan-African community plan to lift our people up using all of these different aspects of what our people are about. And by the way, Dr. McKenzie, I have been spending the last several days kind of clearing my calendar for the week so I can try to make it to your event on Wednesday. My intention is to definitely be there, and I actually blew a couple of people off so I can make sure I can clear my schedule for that. I'm looking forward to that. I think it's important not only in terms of what you personally are doing, but also in terms of all organization starts at the local level. So you can do all the talking that you want about international coalitions and everything else, but if there's no local grassroots support for what it is that all of those different activists are doing, then the whole thing collapses like a mansion built on sand. So it's very important to keep that grassroots eyeball to eyeball local focus in. One last thing I just kind of want to mention, among the different things that as you mentioned, Baba David, that I've gotten involved in, because I'm in the Six Region Diaspora Caucus, I'm in the Pan-African Federalist Movement, I'm working on this cooperative coalition in Maryland, but now there is also a major conference that's being planned for Zimbabwe in April. It is being sponsored by former African Union Ambassador to the United States, Dr. Arikana Chiombori-Kwa. She is perhaps better known as a former AU official than just about any of the current AU officials, despite the fact that the current African Union Commission chair is the one who kicked her to the curb about 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Her name is bigger than his right now, and she is planning on having what she is calling PAC 8 Part 1. It's in a sense, it's her vision of an 8th Pan-African Congress, even though I know that there were actually 2 Pan-African Congresses that were held in 2014 and 2015, and they were both billed as the 8th Pan-African Congress, but in part because she was convinced that those two conferences were incomplete and also because of the fact that Ugandan President Museveni wants to host the 30th anniversary of the 7th Pan-African Congress in Uganda next year, 2024, and he wanted her to hold this more or less a preparatory Pan-African Congress in Zimbabwe in April of this year. So as a result, largely because of his pushing, they're calling it PAC 8 Part 1, and the next year will be PAC 8 Part 2. The reason I mention this is because yesterday afternoon I was on a 4.5-hour Zoom call. You know, I wouldn't have thought that I had the patience to sit through a 4.5-hour Zoom call. But it was a 4.5-hour Zoom call with about 300 participants in this Zoom call. And Dr. Arkana Chimborekwa was there basically presiding over the thing. A brother I know in Guinea-Bissau, who I met back in 2007 when he was in the United States and had more hair, who now goes by the name Sipiwe Baleka. And he has signed on with her effort. He actually spent several days at her house one time last week and helped her formulate a lot of the plan for how they're going to promote this African diaspora, Pan-African Congress is essentially what it is for, I think it's going to be late April, April 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, something like that. So he's helping to formulate, put all that together. And so yesterday, they held a Zoom preparatory conference for what's going to happen in April. They're going to have at least two more. The one they had yesterday was, interestingly enough, about dual citizenship and mechanisms toward achieving dual citizenship. I know you were talking to Baba Stewart just a little while ago, and he was talking about moving to Ghana. And in that call, the primary people who were speaking, there's a brother who has repatriated or rematriated, if you will, to Ghana. And it was a sister who I know, who I've known in SRDC for years, who rematriated to first Kenya and now Tanzania. And both of them talked about the issues that they have faced since they settled in Ghana and in Tanzania with regard to obtaining full citizenship. Her issue in Tanzania is that pretty much, I think, every three months or six months, anyone who is currently a diaspora resident in Tanzania has to actually leave the country for a couple of days, get their temporary stay visa renewed, and then return. So that is a problem. She's also had issues as far as setting up her business in Tanzania, but she's pushing ahead with it. She's sticking it out. The brother in Ghana, Brother Yao, was talking about similar but not exactly the same issues that he has had as far as gaining his citizenship in Ghana. I know the previous Ghanaian presidents had ceremoniously essentially bestowed citizenship in Ghana on a number of African diasporas, but it's not always as easy as that. There are some roadblocks that are put up, and the other sticking point for a lot of African diasporans is that most, if not all, African countries will require you to renounce your U.S. citizenship, and a lot of us don't want to renounce our U.S. citizenship just in case we move over there, we get there, and all of a sudden it's not what we thought it was, or somehow or another, there are some other issues or difficulties that lead us to believe we need to be able to return to the United States. The African countries are kind of loath to grant dual citizenship because they figure if you're going to move here, then you should just renounce your citizenship wherever you're from, and you should stay here so that if you do something, then we can grab you up as a citizen and essentially deal with you right here without having to worry about you running back to the United States. But dual citizenship is still apparently a bit of a sticking point for a lot of diasporans who are attempting to return home. So I wanted to just mention that was part of the conversation yesterday, and it'll probably be a topic in the actual Congress that is held in Zimbabwe in late April.
Okay, I appreciate that, soldier. And Brother Cliff always has a wealth of information, and if you want to leave your information in the chat room, sir, please do so. And Miss Kathleen Murphy, can you unmute yourself, please?
Yes.
Okay. Look, I know that you know you play a dual role, but one thing I want you to speak just a little bit about, you know, because like I said, when I was a child, I didn't have, you know, too many resources to help me out when I had some issues. And but you do a unique thing. It's not unique, but it's been done, you know, throughout our history. We always had storytellers and things like that in the villages. But you actually take time out to read to our children. And I wanted, you know, I just want to ask you why you do that. And the second thing is, I want you to say a little bit about tomorrow night podcast too.
Okay, thank you. I think that if I could leave you all with one thing, it's something that I have observed over the last few years. I do go and read with an organization, and we have readers that go into the classrooms each month. Once COVID started, we would do it virtually. But when we were going into the classrooms, at the end of the year, we had a program where we would give a brand new book to each student that was in our reading program. Now, these would be second and third grade students. And we would go into each room, separate the books, a variety of books for age-appropriate second and third graders. And we would put them up on the desk, and groups of five or six would come up at a time and select their own new book, go back to their desk, and write their name in the book, and then they take that book home. That starts their library or add to their existing library, personal library at home. Well, to my surprise, I found that at the end of the sessions, across the board, any of the books that had black faces remained on the desk. Couldn't get rid of the books with our faces. They just would not be selected by our children. And so that was something, who would have thought that? And so what we decided to do was to put a little more emphasis on what we do monthly and not just at the end of the year. So we started doing more culturally diverse books as we read each month. And we kind of got away from Dr. Seuss and went into more serious nature books about us. And we're seeing a turnaround. It's slow, and it's helping. And it's people like Joy Ford who is making a difference. Because when I started, and I order books for this organization, so I've been ordering for some years now. And I go in, I get excited, I see a book, and I find that I go and I want to check out that author. I'm thinking, whoa, how interesting. And I find that author, in most cases, is a Caucasian who's writing about our black children, our black books, all of the little fun books, predominantly still being written by Caucasians. So I applaud Miss Joy and others who are out there now and who are writing the books that our children can get and use. And I think we will make a difference. It's going to take time. Just think, all of the little black faces stayed on the desk, all of those beautiful books, the kids would not pick up the books that look like them. We need to change our image. What's important, our self-image and what it means. They have the little books out now with the little puffy hair, and my hair is cute, my hair is curly. So we're getting there, but it's going to take time. So Miss Joy and the rest of you, I applaud you on that. And I just would like to say about tomorrow night, still we are having our Tuesday night call, and it is Black History Month. And we were planning to have, as our guest speaker, Ms. Kim Poole and Mr. Haki Amin tomorrow night. And as you know, they travel extensively throughout Africa and other Central America and all over. And it is a joy for them to come on and talk to us about their projects and programs. So that will be 7:30. So we look forward to that. And then after that, the week after that, I believe it's the 28th of February, for our Tuesday night call, we're going to have our own Dr. Leroy McKenzie Jr. to come on. And he is going to have his author showcase. And he's going to have some of the authors come on, the older and the new ones, and just go over their books. And that should also be something that we can gain a lot of insight from. So, David, that's all I have for now. Looking forward to tomorrow night.
Okay, I appreciate that. And before before we close this section out, Mr. Neil Spencer, can you unmute yourself?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You see, Mr. Neil Spencer, he's starting a project in Texas, and I just want you to share a little bit about your vision about what you want to do for the black businesses and services there in Texas.
Well, what I'm trying to do is unify the black businesses to support each other, to support the community, to actually realize that we do have black businesses. Here in Sherman, Texas, we're about 4% of the population, which is not really much, but we do need to stick together. We don't understand that building our economy will help our churches, our schools, our scholarships. It'll help everything, but it seems like in Texas, in Sherman, we depend on a lot of white patriots to support scholarships and different things, and we don't have the businesses participating because they're not really asked to by those that are doing certain programs. But I'm trying to change that and unite us in a way that we can contribute to the community and prosper and start to thrive. And I think through unity that we can thrive and we can prosper because we have information to give each other. We have support for each other. We can endorse each other. So many things we can do, but it's kind of hard to get it through in the minds of the community because they've been so long without doing something like that. But I came up with one thing that I think would help, and it was a theme that I thought would help every celebration. And I quoted, every celebration is preparation for our future. Using that as a theme, MLK celebration, Black History programs, Juneteenth, we do an NAACP banquet, and a lot of churches have banquets. But I noticed that we're not usually challenged at those programs. We just, it's a feel good till you leave and you forget about it. But we need something to aspire us to go on or when we do have an event or a program, something that inspires us, a speaker, some type of situation with the children, black books, black authors, something that inspires us to do more than we have been doing. And we just got to wake up and realize that we can do more than we have been doing. We need to do more because just because we're 4%, we just can't just go alone, get along. We got to strive out there and create something new for our people. And that's about all I got to say.
Okay. Thank you. I just want y'all to know that, Mr. Neil Spencer, you know, Texas is a very big state. And he's going to organize because we're going to assist him. Well, I'm going to assist him with that. You know, we have some blueprints and some things that he and I are working out that we're going to do just that. And also, before we close this out, there's a couple more people who have not spoke yet. And I don't know if Brother Rico Crowley want to speak. Brother Rico. Okay.
Good evening, everyone. Peace and blessing. I'm enjoying this, the podcast. Great show. Thank you.
All right, sir. And Brother Rico runs an organization called God's Giving Hands. And it's a powerful organization to help the homeless, the needy. And they do, not only, serve food, they provide information, clothing, and so many other things. And not only do, God Giving Hands, but Rico himself has joined forces with so many other organizations who are doing something similar. So this brother is a true soldier. So if you're ever looking for a good charity that's serving us and serving all people, really, but this brother, he's sincere, and it's not about him. As you can see, it's about his business, his father's business. And his father is God. And that's what he's about. So, support this brother. And Mr. Walter Murphy, manager of the National Black Unity News, you'd like to share anything, sir?
Absolutely, positively. Hello to everyone. This is Walter Eugene Dempsey Murphy, and I do appreciate the idea of just being on this call, ladies and gentlemen. You guys are amazing. I've gleaned so much already, but I just want to add one thing to this conversation in reference to the idea of racism and education and a few other things that kind of all boils down to the same thing. It's about information, and it's about where it comes from. And it is true, David and the rest of you guys, that, you know, we are a solution-oriented organization, the National Black Unity News, and our main goal is to provide information they could use yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And one of the things I want to share with you right now is the fact that this thing about our children, our youth. Kathleen talks about how she goes into the classroom and how some of these kids did not identify with a black book because of whatever reason. We still have a problem with not only the books, but the dolls and a few other things that our black children gravitate towards that are not the same color of their skin. But what I do know is that when you are being taught something, it is important that you know who your teacher is. We all have a brain that is pliable and gullible to almost any type of information. To prove that, you can see what's happened to our politics across the world. Some people who believe in one thing, they can find so many other more people and so many other idealistic individuals that's in that same realm with them that they think they're right. They believe what they're doing. And they're destroying not only parts of our society, but themselves also. But one of the things I want to share with you is the most important thing that we can do. And I was listening to this guy, Dr. Daniel Black, the other day. And he was talking about the Department of Education, a few other things. But one of the things he said was, is why would you want to send your kids to a school to be taught by a system that was built to hate you? Our educational system, you know, Black History Month? Yeah. Where's the White History Month? They don't need one. Why? Because they wrote the history. And our history is interwoven and that white history, so-called white history in America and across, it is so deep that, you know, you cannot appreciate the things that we have contributed in America in the last 100 years, black folk. Look at the list of things, like you name it, so many things. But if we don't teach our own children, we're subjugating them to whatever anybody else teaches them. And y'all know where I'm coming from. So we can complain, moan, and groan about our society, our, you know, Generation Z, X, Y, all that, you know, being taught in the third grade to be, you know, sent to jail by the, all of that is true. Every bit of it is true. But if we don't start teaching our own children, ladies and gentlemen, the truth, the bare naked truth, we're going to get the same thing we've been getting for the last, 400 or 500 years. Back to you, David.
I appreciate that. You know, you hit on quite a bit. But, you know, in closing, let me say this. You know, like I said, we already present problems. And most of us know what the problem is. But the thing is providing solutions. Now, pretty much everybody on here is solution-oriented. And I share this with you because, as my brother just said, Brother Taylor just said, you know, we have to come up. You know, we need to talk about the issues, but we have to come up with concrete solutions, and everybody can bring something to the table. Now, you know, I was just watching the news earlier today, and the president of the United States went to Ukraine, secretly, as they say, and he almost wrote a blank check to the man saying that as long as it takes, we're going to support you. And I understand that I think I'm right. I think they say they spent $100 billion thus far already into that country. $100 billion. And when you walk the streets of Baltimore or walk the streets of your own city or going throughout the diaspora and you see the war torn, because this many people dying in our streets, black children, black boys and girls dying in our streets in that whole country over there. Yet they can't find resources to take care of us. that just goes to show you where the hearts and their minds is, because the only thing, the only conclusion I come, because they look just like them. That's my assess of it, you know, because they look just like them. And so, but in any case, you know, in Africa, you know, so many other places have been needing services, but, you know, nobody gets the media, nobody gets the resources, nobody gets that, because that's what they do. Now, the thing is, we have to do, Ms. Murphy just said, what we need to do is take care of us. Now, everybody brings something to you, but I just want to share with you that I'm still working on a project for November the 11th where I'm going to bring resources to the city of Baltimore, and I'm going to tell you why Baltimore, because it's my hometown. You know, charity begins at home, but I'm putting together a resource guide, and I'm going to have like a convention-type event in November where we're going to bring resources. So we won't be no more excuses. If you need help here, there, and everywhere, it will be resources in this resource guide to assist you. But it also will highlight our Black businesses and services, those who's putting in the work and all of that. So, you know, prepare for that, you know, because the National Black Unity News will be one of the major sponsors of this event. But also is this. When it comes to education, when it comes to financing, when it comes to information, Mr. Murphy just said, you know, they can say we own less than 1% of the media. And our children, even ourselves, are being bombarded with their messages, their way of doing things. And you know, we made great strides, but, you know, we came a long way, but we have a long way to go. But as you see, just on this small group of people here, we have so many resources, so much talent. Not only here, but you have people from England on here. You have people from Panama. You have people going and moving to Ghana and, I mean, in Africa, and people travel through. I know we all over the place now. And we have access to all sorts of things, but we have to be careful what we have access to. But in closing, I want to extend invitations to those out there, because we have, the National Black Unity News has a lot of resources too to help you to get to the next level wherever you want to go. You know, not only do we provide media services, of course we do this podcast, and tomorrow night we do a podcast, but a lot of us have talent that you're not even aware of. That's why it's so important to connect with one another, what Brother Cliff is talking about, that will. Because in that well, in the circle, in the inner circle of that well is where the true power lies. And with the National Black Unity News, we come a long way in a short period of time. Yes, we are the number one black circulated newspaper in the country right now. But guess what? We haven't even scratched the surface yet. And I'm going to tell you why. You know, everything takes time. But you know what the strong part about our publication is that inner circle that Brother Cliff talking about, that unity. And you just heard from most of the people that you heard from are editors or writers in the National Black Unity News. Even my brother Zeke Stewart was in our very first issue of the National Black Unity News. And so everybody has some, you know, but what I'm saying is this. See, the National Black Unity News bring you a variety of resources and information. But where the real power is when people get to talking to one another, sharing information with one another, sharing ideas. And so many people have formed partnerships and doing this and doing that. And so then, like I say, we have all over throughout the DS, we have so much power. But one of the goals is like Brother Cliff is saying, we have to connect those dots. We have to bring all of these different disciplines into a system where we know who's doing this, we know who's doing that. And so again, brothers and sisters, you know, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us this evening, those who are on Facebook, those who are on Blog Talk Live. This podcast is simulcast. And a lot of people, we don't bring a lot of people inside the room because we only share with a select group of people because of security. Because when you open up to the general public, that means you're subjected to, I've got the name of that word, they use bombing or something like that. People come in and bombing. Disrupt the meeting. Yeah. And so that's why we don't do it that way. That's why we don't have large groups of people on there. But we do send it out. That's why I said we're on Facebook Live as we speak. Also on Blog Talk Live as we speak. And we're going to open up many other doors in the very near future. As you can see, we are doing some things. You know, we're not just talking. And so if you're serious, I don't care what you're doing, what project you got, you know, there's people that we have in our inner circle that can assist you. And you can assist us. It's reciprocal. You give and you receive. And because most, like I said, everybody on here is a wealth of information, have a multitude of talents. And so it's time, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a drill. This is warfare. This is life and death. And if we don't do it, because you expect other people to do it, they have not done it for us yet, and I don't think they will. It's up to us to take care of us. And so I want to thank everybody for your participation. And I'm going to bid you all a good night. And if you can, come on tomorrow night, because Sister Kim Poole is a sister from out of Baltimore, but this sister been traveling all over the world for many years. I mean, and she carried the National Black Unity News everywhere she goes. Brother High Key is traveling all over the country and all over the world now. You know, so we got world travelers, and we got local, we got people all over in almost every state in the publication. And like I say, you know, and I'm grateful for the participation, but we come a long way again. We got so far to go, and with everybody participation, because everybody brings something to the table, and we all can feast upon it. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bid you all a pleasant good night and hope to see you tomorrow night. And if you need some assistance, or you want to help, or you have some information that you want to share, give me a call. You know, we can work something out. You know, this is David Murphy, and I'm going to say good night. And I'll see you all tomorrow. Take care.
Good evening.
Good night, all.
Good night.
God bless.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night, David.
Good night, David.
Care. Yeah.
I'll be calling you, David. This is Zeke.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Yes, sir. All right, y'all take care.
Okay, good night. We'll catch you next week, same time, same station. All right, this is Baba Sitawa Jahi signing off.